ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builder Show. Today, I speak to Gail Breton from Authority Hacker. Now, Authority Hacker produce, you know, awesome courses for content publishers and content site builders. The production value is like so high. The quality of the content is just awesome. They've also got their own YouTube channel, their own podcast, and they share on there like lots of their strategies that they use to grow content sites. Really great to have Gail on the show, somebody that I've listened to for a very long time now. So it's great to kind of interview him back. We cover lots and lots of topics. It's a really, I think, you know, high value show. But we talk about their portfolio, some of their wins. They've Authority Hacker, Mark and Gail, they've sold two six-figure sites in the last few years. So we talk about mostly about the most recent one. We speak about aged domains and the benefits of aged domains and, essentially what good value they are without giving too much away and why. And we also talk about why paying for links, you know, is inevitable these days with modern day SEO. So lots of things we covered, lots of things we talk about, lots of things that I think you're going to find interesting. So without further ado, let's get on with the show.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builder Show. Today, I have with me Gail Breton from Authority Hacker. And for Mark's benefit, I'd like to say, how's it going, Gail?
Yeah, I never have to come up with an answer with that. Well, as I told you, I've been quite busy updating a lot of like the trainings for Authority Hacker. This way I can just like plug our stuff at the same time right in the intro. Here we go. But I just came back from 10 days in Portugal. Actually, I was with Mark, my co-founder. We'll probably talk about him a bit later. And I've decided I want to move there actually. So I think in a two-year timeline, I think I won't be reporting from Hungary anymore, but I'll be reporting from the south of Portugal if everything's going all right. I'm pretty excited about that. So it's been a good break, but now I'm really motivated to go back to work, which is why I was working all day on all these updates. So that's how it's going, if you want to know everything.
that's a more detailed answer than Mark normally gives. Yeah, right. But yeah, no, that's funny you should say that, because yeah, we're thinking about going to South Portugal for our holiday next year. And we've got a Portuguese friend, so they've been bigging it up. So yeah, cool. So I guess a lot of people listening to this podcast, a lot of people in the space would already have heard of Authority Hacker and heard of yourself. But for people that haven't, it'd be really good to give them a brief kind of summary of like your background.
Yeah, I started online marketing. I started like SEO like, it's going to be like 13 years next year or something like that. So like it's a while now. I started when I was still a student. I think I was like year two of my studies when I started doing SEO for an agency. So I started like in a professional world right away. Not that they were that professional, but whatever. I started in that. I did quite okay with them. I got hired after I graduated from my degree. By the agency, I was working for them in Kuala Lumpur at the time. Then I moved to London for them and helped them open an office. And then kind of like realized that I could probably do this myself because I was running pretty much a team there and doing all the work, really, while the owner was enjoying the benefits. So I partnered with someone that probably you've heard about, Mark, my co-founder at the time. So we've been working together for like 11 years now. So that was 11 years ago. We started an agency. Classic SEO agency, right? At the time, you'd be selling usually like fixed price packages. So you'd be selling like $600, $1,000, $2,000. And, you know, we'll take care of SEO for you. Whatever that entailed, we'd just try to figure out how to do it for people. That gave us a lot of like field experience and like working on many, many projects. We ended up doing quite well. I mean, like it started as a small agency, but we had a big office in Budapest. We had like 35 staff. We had like, we were working for big clients as well. Like we get like missions from big sites. Like we got missions from like Expedia, for example. I remember we helped them. Yeah. We optimized like 100,000 title tags in a weekend or something like that. Was pretty insane. We worked with Macy's. We worked with 99 Designs, etc. So we did some big sites, some small sites too, right? We've done a bit of both. So like, but that gave us all that field experience of like doing stuff and trying to be creative as well in tackling these issues, because yeah, optimizing your title tags, pretty easy. Optimizing 100,000 title tags in 48 hours, it takes a bit more creativity to do that. So it's like, but eventually we saw also a lot of our smaller clients that had like blogs, etc., do pretty okay, and we're like, hey, we can do that. and so we took some of the profit of that agency and started investing it in building our own blogs. It was also beneficial in terms of like building links for clients, because when we're an actor of an industry, it's much easier to like be taken seriously and then eventually get something. So it was kind of like, you know, killing two birds in one stone. Mm-hmm. And then some of these sites did not so well. Some of these sites did quite okay, to the point where when we hit like five figure with one of our sites, we're like, well, we'd rather do this than the agency. So we sold the agency. And that was probably like, I can't remember, like 6 years ago, six years ago, I'd say. And we sold our agency. It wasn't a great sale, to be honest. Like, you know, we made some money. Like I had a couple years of living expenses under my belt, but it's not exactly like I became super rich from that exit, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. But I was happy to be out, to be honest. And I was happy to have my time, and that gave us a lot of time to focus on that. And ever since, we've been building our own sites with Mark, and we have been documenting what we do on a site called Authority Hacker, which you mentioned, where we have a podcast, we do some YouTube videos, we do some blog posts, there's a bit of everything. But the point is, like, we do that stuff, we share, you know, our experience doing it in the field, sometimes contradicting what you might be reading on blog posts, and, you know, trying to also systematize that, but at the scale of a small business owner, not when you're a massive multinational company, so that people can be a bit competitive against big publishers. And so that's what we're talking about on Authority Hacker. And, you know, we also have premium training. And I think there's more than, we're getting to 10,000 students now on Authority Hacker, like paid students. So it's, it's been doing well as well on that end. And that's pretty much what we do. So we run sites, and we have Authority Hacker, where we talk about running sites.
Awesome. So with your agency, just, we won't cover too much about the agency because that's history for you. But you say you only lasted right around 4 years.
Yeah.
And you had an office in Budapest. But how did you manage to pick up those big clients like Macy's and
it's the most random ways, like literally, like my ex boss in Kuala Lumpur became the in-house SEO for Flippa, 99 Designs, etc. And so, like, I got in that way, for example. Like, and then and I presented to, like, you know, the CEOs, etc., like, really quickly. Like, it got me in that way. Macy's, one of their in-house SEO employees, was reading my blog, my forum posts on Wicked Fire, and DM'd me.
Right, wow.
And the funny thing is, like, I'm French, right? I had no idea what Macy's was. So the guy DMs me and he's like, hey, would you be interested in working with Macy's? I'm like, I'll check your site out. I'll let you know.
what's the URL?
I have no idea, right? It's like it's one of these things where the brands are completely different between Europe and the US. It's like I got to learn that it was a pretty big brand eventually when I Googled it. But that was pretty funny. And so like we ended up having some full-time staff in the office working for them, and then just like working in relation with their in-house, you know, obviously you're not running SEO for Macy's. You just run a part of a project with their in-house SEO team or something, right? And so that's the kind of stuff we do. And so like a lot of these things happen that way, like, but also a lot of like online posting. I was already quite active on like forums, etc., like posting guides and stuff. And so kind of like the premise of Authority Hacker, really. And that got us quite a bit of clients. Like I wasn't very regular on content creation because, I mean, it wasn't my job, right? I was busy working for the clients and also like managing campaigns, etc. But when we did it, it was helping quite a bit. So a mix of that, ranking on Google, and being active on communities really is how we got big clients. And then time really takes time as well to get all the referrals and stuff.
Yeah, for sure. So. Okay. So Adam always asks this question of our guests, and I never do. So I'm gonna start now. So, do you remember how you made your first dollar online?
Actually it was building an affiliate site, but it was a really bad built one. So I was working for a SEO agency. I was in Kuala Lumpur, and I was doing keyword research for their clients, right? Like they would sign up new clients and I'd like make the strategy and, you know, target some keywords they should be optimizing for, etc. And so I was doing keyword research all the time, and at some point I did, and it will show you how poor my keyword research was back then, actually, because I eventually came across that seemingly easy keyword using Market Samurai at the time. I'm sure you might remember that tool, but it was interesting. Let's just say that. and I picked the keyword diesel belts. And I ended up ranking number one for, I actually picked up the domain dieselbelts.org because it was that easy at the time. That's like 10 years ago or something like this for people who are asking. So it's not exactly the same context now. But I picked up that domain. I picked up a WordPress plugin at the time that kind of like makes your site look like an e-commerce and pulls, from Amazon. So it would pull the image from the product and it would show a bunch of like the brand diesel and belts, you know, on it. And it would look like an e-com. You'd click on the product. People would just land on Amazon product page. And if they check out, I make some money, right? The problem is I didn't really think about the double meaning of what diesel belt could mean, because diesel belt is also a part of an engine that is used. Yeah. And so while there was this in search volume, while there was, you know, all the stats look good, probably at least half of the traffic was not looking for what they were finding on my webpage. And there was no search intent at the time. So just spamming links to that page, even if there was no content, was enough to rank it. But the conversion rate was abysmal, right? So that site ended up making probably like $5 to $8 a month eventually, when it should have made way more if I had picked the right keyword. But that's essentially how I made my first like passive income online money. But like still it got me hooked on this little money, even if it was like, you know, $8 a month or something. It was just exciting to get that little tiny wire on my bank account, you know?
Oh yeah, for sure. It's cool. It's cool when it first happens. Yeah. Light bulb goes off. So yeah.
Exactly.
Awesome. So I know over the last, or at least maybe 12, 18 months, you kind of started a bunch of new sites. So it'd be really cool to hear a little bit about what you've been working on, what's been going well, not so well. But also, I guess, I mean, that I know of, at least you sold a couple of sites for six figures between your mark and one quite recently. So it'd be good to talk a little bit about that too.
Yeah, let's talk about the ones we sold and I'll talk about the ones that we are working on right now. I mean, I'll talk mostly about the last one we sold. Like, it's kind of like semi-public. Like, it's like people who follow our courses saw me work on that site throughout the course. Like, it's one of the example sites. Like, in the course, I like to be hands-on as well. Like, you see my screen. I'm on a green screen. Like, it's literally behind me. I just pull it down now, but usually I have a green screen. I'm like over it. I get to show people how, and I work on a real site. I'm like, okay, let's build a comparison table. Let me show you how to do that, etc. So that was one of the sites that is in a lot of the lessons still. It's a sports site. I'm just going to go this far. Actually, no, I think we say it's a golf site in the podcast. So I'll go this far. It's in the golf niche. And it does rank really well. It ranks top five for the biggest commercial Go keywords at this point for pretty much all of them.
Yeah.
So it did pretty well. We actually built it as a case study site for our beginner's course 2.5 years ago, something like this. And then because we reshoot that course like every year and a half or something, like we build a new site every time. So people like, usually when we build a site, everyone copies it. It's just the classic rule. Yeah. Like we build a site, everyone's like the current case study site. I've seen so many copies already. it's pretty funny. So usually we don't really pursue these competitively because we know just everyone's just going to copy the crap out of it. So we're just like, well, we'll show you how we build them. But like the sites we actually put our dollars behind, they're not necessarily shut publicly. But that site, people kind of forgot about it after it was not the current case study site and not many people were looking at it. It was never like, it was making like $200 a month, maybe something like this. And then 2020, we hired someone new in our team that was going to take over a lot of the SEO tasks from me, actually. But I didn't want that person to work on our most valuable sites immediately. I wanted them to like kind of warm up on things that had lower stakes. And so that site was just like hanging around. I was like, oh, take this. Let's just like work on, let's make you work on this. I'll just like kind of like coach you. And we'll, you know, as a way to just build you up to the position and make sure that you understand how we want to do things. And so that site was making $200 a month. And we hired a writer for that person to manage. We had our link building team build some links as well regularly. That's also one of the sites we started experimenting on with paid links. I'm sure we'll talk about that later. And we basically built that very simple engine. My goal was not to invest a lot of money, more like to train that person and just maybe grow a site, maybe not, but let's see. But within, I think, 14 or 15 months, that site went from $200 a month to like $5,000-$6,000 a month or something. So that person did pretty well. It's like, yeah. I was helping, you know, but I was more consulting than actually running the show, you know. I'm kind of like trying to become a consultant for our staff now. And we just did the classic build links, add content. It was a hard silo structure. So, you know, like with the URLs, like all the sub silos encoded in the URLs. And we're very big believers of building like one silo at one time, you know. So we pick like one subsection and we'll build like 100 pages for it before we jump onto the next thing. So usually our sites look a little bit weird initially because you'd have like one category massively expanded and it's going to have like one page just to like show the category structure on the menu, but really there's nothing behind it. Same with the other case study site. Like we have another case study. You probably see it on the homepage of Atari Hacker. A site we sold for like mid six figures as well. Same thing. That site only had one silo built, actually. The rest was just like nothing behind the exact same setup. And the reason we sold it, I mean, we could have kept it, but I wanted to transition that person to bigger projects because obviously they did quite okay. So it was the time to kind of like let it go. At the same time, it was a cool story because it's a site that people saw me register that domain on camera, right? There's footage of me like going on siteground.com and just typing that domain. And now there's kind of like the end story of like, well, it's sold for six figures. Yeah. So it just shows the whole process, you know? It's like I wanted to kind of like close that story, take the resources I put in there and move them to a project that is not necessarily shared publicly yet, but has higher stakes from our end because now I would say that person is very valuable to our SEO team, you know? So that's pretty much what happened with that last case study. Now for the sites we're working on right now, it's quite interesting because I'm really trying to crack quality AI writing right now. And it's something that we're spending quite a bit of time on. We don't always succeed, let's be honest. Like some stuff is pretty shit that comes out of AI writers. But it is the future and you can't deny it. And it's not about like content writers are going to disappear. It's like content writers are going to be operators of AI writing tools. Mm-hmm. And they are like, I explain it. It's like an exoskeleton, right? It's like you just put it and you have these massive arms and you can just punch super hard, etc. It's pretty much this for a writer. And so like people who don't kind of train at that, will be left behind eventually. If they update to GPT-4 and there's like 10 times more data that's behind the algorithm and stuff, it's going to be quite good. Like And the thing is, like, the style of writing is often better than average freelance writers that you can hire on ProBlogger these days. So I think the command of English that these tools have is already, like, is already good. It's more like the facts and the fact that I just make stuff up that's really annoying with AI right now. And that's why you need a human behind to, like, fact check, etc. So we have, like, experts, we have, like, content writers that do the research and then, like, prepare the structure for the AI and do all of that. So we're really trying to crack that on our current sites now. I would say, like, one site's doing quite well with it, one site a little bit less, to be frank. And we're trying to actually, I have a call after this podcast to literally talk to the writer of that site that's struggling a little bit right now. So, you know, work in progress. But other than that, it's like, I mean, we have a formula that kind of works. So it's not that different from the other stuff you've seen from us, where we expand the one given silo, where we build a bunch of links, and then we try to, content and links, really. That's it, you know? Like, as many updates as Google throws at us, the SEO game has been roughly the same for the last 10 years. It's just like they're throwing like 1% changes here and there. And it's like sometimes that 1% change can be a big swing for your site. But overall, the SEO game is not that different. The only thing that has changed a lot, I think, is content quality. Like, content on the internet now is much higher quality than it was like 5, 6, 7 years ago. And so, like, the amount of effort you need to put in there is higher, but also the tools that help you create content are also much better. So, you know, it's kind of balanced, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I've got a question for you on the silos. So, you know, when you're creating, I don't know if you've got any experience with this, but when you're going ahead and creating a new silo for a site, so like a shoulder niche or something like that, and I guess with the golf one, like it's pretty narrow anyway, so like a new silo is probably going to be pretty golfy. But like you know, if you, on other sites where you know, potentially maybe it's more of a sport, broadly a sports site where you've got golf, you've got football, then you've got whatever else, you know, have you ever experienced a point where, you know, the second silo doesn't take for whatever reason? It won't, like, it won't start ranking? And therefore, have you got any kind of tips on, like, what you might do? Do you give up on that silo or do you do something?
Yeah. So usually, like, I'll start, like, 15, 20 articles on the new silo. Mm-hmm. And then I'll just jump on the next one. And then the next one. And I'll just kind of monitor. And then whenever one takes off, we just go ham on it. And we forget the ones that don't rank. Basically, it's part of the game, right? But it's also a lot of it is due to your keyword and competitive research. Like, you need to identify, you know, weak sites ranking for your keywords, etc. Like, if they don't exist, then your chances of ranking are pretty low. So, like, for me, like, the key to all of this is having an up-to-date competitors list with all their metrics, so that you can monitor what's working for them and then emulate that, and then reduce your failure rate. You'll never be to zero, right? It happens pretty often that on single pieces of content, a lot of pieces of content fell on most sites. Like, most of your traffic comes from like 10 pages or something, which means everything else failed pretty much. And that's okay. And that's like, you need to just be okay with it, but that's just the reality. So really what you're fighting for is like the lowest failure rate possible while accepting it exists. And so, but also you, rather than like trying to fix your issues, sometimes it's better to focus on pushing your wins further, you know, because if you accept failure, you understand it's part of the game. And like, regardless of how much bragging and Lambos people put on their thumbnails on YouTube, most of their pages don't rank. Then you realize that it's completely fine for sections of your site to not do well. And that's expected, to be honest.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's a good point, actually, because, you know, I've been, I guess that's the way that I would do it. And I guess that's the way we recommend our customers to do it as well. It's just kind of give up on those ones. But recently I've been thinking about, you know, what, trying like firing a few maybe relevant links to that silo to see if we can kind of like.
You can. Do it. If they're really valuable, like if there's like really profitable keywords in there, etc., it's worth fighting more for it. But it's one of these things where you just decide, like, do I push more resources to this or do I abandon it? If you want to abandon a silo as well, you can just take that content off your site for like a few weeks and then just reuse it as guest posts or something, like, and just like throw it for links instead of having to pay for content for your links or something. Like, and it's okay. Again, it's like recycling your content to something that is more beneficial than a page that doesn't rank, you know?
Yeah. I think the answer is always they just go for the stuff that's winning.
And accept failure. I know a lot of beginners really struggle with that. Accept that most pages, you will not rank number one. Like, that's not how SEO works. No matter how good the SEO person is, you will not. Like, if you're already, if you're like top five, is great. But most of your pages are not going to be on page one, even for really, really great SEO, unless you're building like small sites with epic pages for every single page. But if you have like a decent volume of content, like, it's quite unlikely. And it doesn't mean that you have a worse business. The profitability of your business, etc., might be completely respectable and probably better than the guy that has a five-page site. Each page is amazing as ranking. If you only have like 10% of your pages ranking, but your site is like 300 pages, you have 30 pages ranking versus the guy with five pages, you know?
Yeah.
And you're doing better. So it's that balance of like quantity and quality, and it's something we still struggle with sometimes, you know. It depends on the project, depends on the competition, depends on all of that. So it's not like you set it and it's the same for all your projects. It's a balance you find on a per project and even per silo basis, to be honest.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, that's awesome. So in terms of what are some of the other sites you've been working on then? I suppose you can't give away the niche.
I'm not going to give the sites. That's the plug. Usually we tell the story when it's kind of over or something like this. But like, as I said, like if there's sites we put like a decent chunk of money behind, like I would not share the URL, mostly because a lot of people copy us. But like, you know, there's some sites, we always have sites, like example sites in our courses that we show something, like if you check our YouTube videos, we show some of them as well, etc. So there is stuff lying around, but there's some projects we'll share publicly, some we won't share publicly. Right now, we've shared that recent case study, and the other sites we're pretty much not sharing the URLs, but we do have a team of full-time writers writing for them. We have a link building team working on them, etc. And we're still going quite strong on building sites, basically.
Yeah. So do you have your writing team, are they freelancers? Are they high-time?
So we've actually recently switched from freelancers to full-time.
Uh-huh.
Mostly because I find that freelancer, it's really hard to improve freelancers. Like, they just don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. It's like they're selling you a service, right? It's like when you go to a restaurant, they don't improve their cooking if you ask them, you know? They just, this is it. And if you're not happy, go somewhere else, right? And freelancers feel more and more that way. Now, I'm not saying that freelancers, it only makes sense to hire full-time people when you have the budget for it. So you need like multiple thousands of dollars per month to make sense in terms of budget. If you don't have that, freelance still makes sense, or buying a service like yours still makes sense on a smaller scale. But I find being able to interact, like, you know, my writers are on Slack right now. I can hit them on the phone anytime I want. Every morning they report to us on what they're going to work on. They are creating SOPs for the other writers. They have quality. They proofread each other and they help each other, etc. So
yeah,
if you want to take things to like the next level and you want to, like, for example, as I said, we're working a lot on this AI writing now. So even the profile of writers we're hiring is slightly different. It's people that like are comfortable using like technical tools as well, and like can write, you know, for Jarvis, for example, they write like full recipes and like list of comments to like teach it. And they write templates with, like, you know, they understand the AI. They go a bit further than just writing content. It would be very difficult to do with freelancers. So because we're trying to push things further and we're trying to figure out like what the next frontier is in terms of creating content for small publishers right now, it's better to work closely with an in-house team. But it's a lot more expensive than just buying a couple articles from a freelancer. Let me just say that.
Yeah, yeah. It's exactly the same reason we have full-time writers like ours, because we wanted to train, you know, we didn't want freelance writers that are like writing a social media post 1 week, editing a book the next week, and then writing for your blog. Yeah. You know, we wanted to get
our writers also specialized, so they have like one site assigned to them. So they actually, even if they were not necessarily like massive topic experts when they got started, like 3 months later, they've literally all they do all day is write and research about a given topic, especially because, as I told you, we write about a single silo usually at a time. So they know the heck out of it. It's not like they switch to another client or anything like that. They just do that 8 hours a day research, write, etc. So, you know, a couple of weeks into it, when they are working on the silo, they know a lot of stuff already. It reduces the research time, that then gives you a better content output, that then makes the price per word more competitive than you would pay a freelancer, etc. So there's a lot of like economies of scales that work when you do that. But again, you know, I think our cheapest writer still costs more than $2,000 per month right now. So it's something that people should only consider when they can afford to pay for it, which is not necessarily beginners. So I know if some beginners are going to listen to this podcast, I would still recommend you use freelancers here, or that you write content yourself, or that you use a service. And when you get to that point where you can afford that, then do the switch and try to improve your content quality and price per article by doing that switch.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Awesome. So a couple of things I wanted to chat with you about, like that are quite close to our hearts at Niche Website Builders. And a couple of things that you kind of, I guess you've changed your strategy or changed your thoughts on in the last couple of months. Or more recently. So I guess what the first one is kind of age domains and working with age domains. I know that's something you hadn't done before in the past, but it's something you've been experimenting with a little bit more recently.
Yeah. I mean, I've been experimenting with it for like 2 years or something, but usually, like, as I said, when we create content at Authority Hacker, we have experience with it. Like, we have done it. It's just that I don't come out and do it for 1 week. Like, for example, AI writing, I'm on this for like 6 months now, you know? There's no training that we have yet. I don't think I'm ready yet to teach that. So it's kind of the same as age domain. Now I feel like we have enough experience. Like, I've done it with several domains. I've experienced, like, you know, buying a domain, redirecting it to the homepage, then like breaking down the pages, pushing it to relevant pages. I've kind of tried most scenarios. And I feel quite confident talking about it. And yes, I think it is valuable, especially because if you go to like a medium competitive niche, like a very easy niche, it's still okay. But medium competitive niche nowadays, because, you know, there's more sites, it's more competitive, there's more publishers pushing content, etc. Your first year is really quite bad, quite often. Yeah. And so you get to skip a good chunk of that if you start on an age domain that is relevant. But the keyword is that is relevant. And when I say a relevant domain, it's not just the domain name, it's what the site was before compared to what you do now. Actually, I was watching, I basically mass checked every webmaster chat with John Mueller and checked everything he said on expired domain to try to understand what he said. And and try to read between the lines, because it's always very cryptic with Google and not very clear. But basically what he says is, like, we kind of have no way to reset links on expired domains, because actually a lot of expired domains are just like, you know, a proper business changing hands and things like that. And so as a result, it's quite complicated for us to do that without triggering a lot of false positives. But what we're quite good at is figuring out when the new site is completely different from the old site in terms of topics, etc. So if you just take like a DR50 site, but that was a site about protein, and you make a site about, CBD or something like most people would do, probably you're not going to get much benefits from that. But if you make a site that is a comparison site on whey protein behind that as an affiliate site, you're likely to get some pretty good benefits from that and rank much quicker in general, which is quite nice. And what is quite nice as well is, like, you know, if you have a domain that's like DL0 has no links at all, like, you will never exist. Like, any domain needs like 20 to 50 decent links to even start existing on Google. Whereas if you start on an expired domain, you can afford to skip that and just do a content site, just do the content part of it, and have a chance. I'm not saying you will rank. I'm saying and have a chance to do okay, to get a good starting point without worrying about links until you start making money, which is kind of nice, because building links is extremely resource intensive, whether you outsource it or you do it in-house. And so to that extent, expired domains often are a better deal than pushing link building early in terms of like monetarily. Like, it's just cheaper, right? And also, they get you links that you could not get through outreach. I've given some examples of some domains on the site. It's like, you know, I have links from like apartment therapy on that site. I have links from like huge DR90 plus sites, etc., from what I've picked up. And there's no way anyone in my link building team would probably get these links. So if you combine these kind of like hard to get links with the links our team can build, it's a pretty cool combo of diverse quality links. And the end result is good, actually, and we do quite well. So, I recommend. I can spoil it here. One of the videos I was recording to update our courses now is our beginner's course is going to have a new module on picking up expired domains to start your site, actually. And it's going to come in January for people. Oh, awesome. So it's going to be one of the free updates to the course that people will get in January, because we update this kind of stuff every year. So yeah.
Very good. Yeah, no, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, we've worked on a lot of expired domains now, a lot of aged domains now with our customers. Mm-hmm. So we kind of...
Yeah, you must see it all the time, right?
Yeah, we see them and vet them on our site. And it's just wide, it's quite a wide range. You can never quite guess which ones are going to take off, like any site, right?
I was going to say, they don't all take off, right? Sometimes you don't see much benefit and sometimes it works really well. It's kind of like... there's a bit of gamble to it. It's not too bad. Like the success rate is pretty high from what I've seen. Oh, but yeah, it can happen that you don't see much happening. And sometimes also nothing happens. Then you build like 20, 30 quality links and it just starts taking off way more than you would expect from what I've seen.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. And I mean, I think, generally, like it might be slower than you expected. So it might not give you too much benefit. Well, it will give you some benefit over just a fresh domain because... that's, you're looking at kind of like a year these days, like you're talking about, where it might take a few months, but sometimes it's really, really quick. But we've had like massive extremes, for example. Like our biggest extreme is like we've got a guy we've been working with for about 12 months, and he bought an expired domain. He was quite aggressive with what he did because it was starting to take off really quickly, like really quickly within a few weeks. And then he kind of bought a load of more content from us and then started redirecting a few extra H domains as well. So it's probably like four H domains redirected into there. Like it's probably like 400, 500 posts now. But his site is making around $40,000 a month now. After
nice. Yeah, yeah.
So that's obviously the biggest extreme. But there's loads in between. But you can really hit the jackpot as well with that.
For sure. It can really speed things up. It's like if you want to get things going fast, and time is money too, right? It's like if you're running a site that costs you, you know, money for content, money for links, money for tools you're paying, etc., it's not bringing any money. You're just burning money anyway. So sometimes it's probably worth just throwing that money in from the beginning and cutting that wait time by a significant amount. In the end, you might be saving quite a bit, actually.
Oh, massively! It's a really cheap way of buying links, basically.
Yeah. And it's not really. Like, you know, when Google talks about it, they don't really talk about it as like a gray hat tactic or something like that. It's more like a fact of the industry. When you listen to John Muir or something, it's not really frowned upon. Like, I don't think Google's going to come after you because you've bought an expired domain and built a site on it. It's not really something that happens. So it's a fairly safe way to also buy initial links or buy links in general. The ratio of like cost, reward, risk is fairly good these days, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
And I would not be surprised to see the price of expired domains skyrocket in the next 2 years or 3 years, given that fact.
Oh, I agree. I think they're way undervalued right now.
Like, yes, I agree.
Way undervalued. So, when
you look at the price of like fully built sites that earn money on brokers like Empire Flippers, etc., and then you look at the price of expired domains that have more authority quite often, you're like, wait a second. Is the missing link just the content on that domain, and is it worth this much? And I think the gap is massive, and that's a huge market gap in terms of someone who's looking. If you're looking to scoop value out of that market, that's probably something to do right now.
Yeah.
Like buy expired domains, build sites. One thing as well with expired domain, I've mentioned that in our YouTube video as well. It's that usually when you pick up an expired domain, the main problem is that the branding is terrible. Like you get some random shit name or whatever, and it's like, well, the links are great, but it's not really what I had in mind when I imagined that site, right? And I've done quite okay with buying an expired domain, building a site, running it for a year like a normal site, right? And then redirecting it to a fresh domain and rebranding, basically. Like the same way like TransferWise became Wise, for example. TransferWise.com now redirects to Wise.com. Same way big brands rename themselves, like maybe Facebook's going to be Meta one day or something. You do the same. And you actually have an option in Webmaster's Console to say that you're rebranding and moving your site to another domain. And if you have both registered on the same Webmaster's tool account and you go through all the process of rebranding, etc., you can end up with the benefits of starting fast of an expired domain and one and a half year later, the proper branding. So I would recommend to buy an expired domain on one side that has the links you want and a fresh $10 domain with the branding you probably want. And then a year and a half later, you just rebrand and you have the branding and the rankings.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I like that. Okay, so the other topic we're going to talk about is paying for links. So, you know, famously, you created the shotgun skyscraper technique and, like, always, you know, mentioned that you never pay for links. And that was fine and dandy 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I'm sure. But like,
then everyone did it.
That's right, yeah. Well, sorry, that was partly our fault too. So.
I mean, it's fine. I mean, we had a course that was showing people. So it's like, you can't like sell the course and then blame people for doing it, right? It's like, that would be slightly hypocritical. So no, that's fair. But yeah, obviously, I mean, I think in general, like outreach link building has become the go-to as people, you know, it's an argument I've made with a lot of gray hats that they wouldn't listen to me at the beginning, where I said, outreach is cheaper than building and maintaining a PBN, like in terms of hosting costs, in terms of content, especially with Skyscraper, because you didn't have to pay for content. Therefore, like a guest post, okay, you pay for content, is closer to a PBN because the outreach probably matches the hosting cost and picking up domains cost of the PBN. But for Shotgun, really, if you don't have a content cost, it's fairly cheap, and even if you pay for links, right? And so that's where I think the industry is headed, because finally people took their calculators and understood that it is actually cheaper to do this, and actually it works better because these are real sites, and hopefully they can grow, and hopefully they get organic traffic, etc., which most PBNs don't get, and all that stuff. And so as a result, everyone went with outreach link building. And when, I mean, I know it because when I open my inbox, I have 50 emails of people asking me a link on Otori Hacker. And then I say, haha, no way. And then I just delete everything. But the thing is, like, since everyone's doing it, I think we're reaching a point where no matter how funny your email is, it doesn't really matter anymore. Like, people realize there is value into that. And I find it fair that if I'm going to spend my time to go and edit my website to add your link, like, I would at least be paid for that time. I don't think that's, like, that crazy. And I think this vision of Google of like, oh, the internet is going to be a magical unicorn place where people are just going to link to each other because they create great content, it's kind of over at this point. And the thing is, like, there are so many, like, pretty much any competitive keyword is filled with pages that have paid for links at this point. So the algorithm is flawed already. Even if we went back to resetting everything and everyone was following the rules from tomorrow, like, everything that's ranking will easily outperform any page that hasn't done it in the past. And so it would be almost impossible to show up. So that is a reality of the market. And, you know, it's like, it's always a ratio of risk against reward, right? And one thing that has changed as well in the last few years is that Google doesn't seem to give a shit about people buying links. Whereas they used to care a lot more in the past, and they would like literally have teams that would manually check your stuff and penalize you, etc. Now they seem to, my opinion, they are relying more on search intent to filter search results. They're like, well, as long as what's on the page matches the search intent, we don't really care how people got there. And that's why they kind of like let it slide, I would say, for now. Maybe, I mean, who knows, maybe tomorrow there is an update that massively penalizes people who pay for link. But I don't think that's their approach anymore. I think they gave up on that war. And I think they just hope to get better at understanding page content. Using links as still a decent metric, but not the only metric to judge the value of a page. Like, you can have a million links. If the content on your page doesn't match search intent these days, you will not rank anyway. You could outpower any keyword with links 4 or 5 years ago. You cannot anymore. It's very, very much that. So Google is focused on, let's use AI to understand what's on the page, and let's understand the topics and use the knowledge graph to understand all the subtopics that have been talked about on that page. As long as this is hitting what we want and the users get the search results we want, let's not waste any money or resources in hunting these few SEOs that are buying links and gaming the algorithm that really doesn't change anything for us. So if you calculate that risk-reward thing, you realize then that buying links kind of makes sense now because you have low risk, lower risk at least.
Yeah.
And you have a higher pressure from the market to do it, because on competitive queries, if you don't do it, you will not show up pretty much. But you also need to have a tight on-page game. You can't just rely on buying links to rank on Google these days.
Yeah. I think so. It's a lot. In a way, it's a lot harder when you're buying links or even just acquiring links, because, you know, well, I say it's harder, but like before, you know, you used to get you'd get penalized. Now the thought is that they ignore it. They don't give you any value for that link. So it's kind of hard to know, like, when you're paying for a link, was it worth paying for? Unless you kind of do some kind of due diligence on that link? Like, what would you recommend as like some of the due diligence, or what process do you go through for that?
I'll be honest, I don't run the link building service in our company, so it's like I'm not the best person to ask. But usually I'd be looking at the organic traffic graph to make sure they haven't had like been hit by a core update. Like, seriously, the amount of sites that have been hit by a core update now is crazy. With the, like, we've been dealing with this for like 3 years. A lot of sites have been hit by that. So I'll be making sure, oh, it's like it has a medium recovery or something like that. I usually open the link outs reports in Ahrefs so that, you know, if like the top 50 sites are all casino and CBD sites, we're probably going to avoid that site. And relevance, really, like make and relevance and search traffic, basically. So like make sure the site is at least, if the site is not, it's rare to have a site that's like fully relevant, right? If I have a site about golf, like we didn't get only sites, links from sites about golf, because there's just not that many that would also accept a link, etc. So you'd broaden up quite a bit. Like you could be posting on a business site, but you'd make sure that at least the page that links to you talks about golf in there, for example, or like a golf in business or whatever, or like, you know, how many days did Trump play golf in his first mandate or whatever, something like this, you know, so that there's some degree of relevancy in there. And yeah, that's pretty much it, really. Like no bad neighborhood relevancy of the page, at least. And Google not showing they hate that site. And then after that, it's like, you know, DR and UR. So like the amount of links pointing to that one page, you know?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
What do you guys look at, actually? Well, I'm curious now. What do you guys look at when you pick links?
We've got a podcast on that. There's about 17 or 18 things. Like we share that out with our customers as well. But
okay,
yeah, there's a lot of things. So we do check like the ratio of outbound links versus inbound links. We do look at like traffic levels and historical data. We do look at anchors as well for like any.
External links. Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
I think if you look at search volume of anchor text, I think that's a good one, actually. If you find like all the anchor texts have search volume, you're like, yeah, okay. Yeah. I know what you're doing.
Yeah. We take a look in Wayback Machine, of course, and make sure the site wasn't used for any nefarious purposes in the past and stuff. And I think so.
So you don't believe in redemption then?
We just don't take the risk, I guess.
I know. I'm kidding. I'm just putting you on the spot.
Okay. So, yeah, so I guess in terms of link building, is it the same kind of question, but like what is there something you just wouldn't go, no, somewhere you wouldn't go, something you just would completely avoid?
Sites massively linking out to like crypto casinos and stuff like that, like all the dodgy stuff, basically. Also, I found a lot of hacked websites that didn't know they were hacked. And then they have like Viagra pages they didn't know about and things like that. And so like they're kind of like running, they don't update their plugins, they do all of that. And it's quite interesting. Usually the way you find these is you look at top linked pages, because these hacked websites also, they kind of like create a massive net and interlink each other to like rank each other. I found more than you would think of. And so I would avoid definitely like anything that has been hacked, especially if it's been hacked in the past but fixed. You know, the guy is like sloppy with their site security, it's going to happen again. And you even if the site's clean now, it might be dirty later. But overall, I think that policy of Google of like ignoring bad links also is kind of an opportunity for you to like not necessarily like you might be willing to pay the risk, provided you're not expending a lot of resources on that link. Because you're like, well, what's because Google's just gonna ignore it, right? But like when you're paying for a link, I definitely want for me, it's like relevancy and neighborhood, like who else is on the site and how relevant is the site. And then site metrics come after that. Like it's DR is important, but it's less important than these two things to me, for example.
Oh yeah, for sure. We've been talking about that a lot more lately, actually, about how, relevance is way more important than the DR of the link.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So I think we kind of covered off kind of age domains and paying for links there a little bit to some extent. I guess you already mentioned like in terms of what you can get with age domains, you mentioned some of the links that you can get, they from quite often you can get, if you pick the right domains, you can get stuff from quite like some really good news sites like, you know, New York Times and yep. BBC and stuff like that too. But you know, what other things do you look for in terms of the age domain, or look to avoid in terms of age domains?
So I use a tool called Spamzilla usually to pick up my expired domains. Yep. You probably know about it. They have that score, like the Spamzilla score thing in there, that is pretty good actually in terms of like, they try to essentially find spam, like, you know, spammy links and like previous uses that, like if the domain's been used for spam or something. And usually like that does a good job at filtering stuff out for me. So usually in Spamzilla, I put like domain, like Spamzilla score less than 25 or something, like 0-25.
Yeah.
And most of the time, like I don't really have to think too much after that. Then it's just like, put the domain in there. Do I see some good links? Is there some spam links as well? So if there's like some good links, no spam links, I can put in archive.org and I'm like, well, that was just a random e-commerce in that niche or something. I'm just looking for like a real business, something that was just like some guy that didn't do SEO usually. Like anyone that like was obviously like, if it was a review site before, I would probably not buy it. Yeah. But if it was like an e-commerce from a small company or something like this, and they got like featured in some magazines or something and like some traditional media stuff, stuff that is quite a bit harder to do with like traditional link building, that's what I would go for. Like, it's more like, I'm not really asking like, do I not go for it? I'm more looking for like, I'm not picking up that many expired domains. I'm just trying to pick up good ones at a good price. And it's really that. It's like, was it a real business before? Did it get some like coverage that would be very expensive to get as an SEO person? And can I build a site on it that I can easily monetize? Because you find some great expired domains in niches that you cannot monetize, right? If you find a great expired domain in poetry, like how do you monetize that? Like, I'm sure you can put AdStrive on it or something, but even that is quite tricky, right? With search volume, etc. You might have a couple of like, you know, best sonnets or whatever, something like this, but like there's not that much, right? It's like, so it's really about the niche you find it in as well. And it's like, niche research, when you start from expired domains, is slightly different because you start from the domain and then you reverse back to the business model. Whereas when you start from a fresh domain, you start from the business model and you find a domain that matches it for like 10 bucks or whatever. So it's slightly different. And that's why I'm changing a little bit our beginner's course for people who want to start with expired domains, because the way you think about it is different. And monetization for me is the most important, really. Like, where's the money?
Yeah.
And it's not so simple to find an expired domain that has good quality links, that was a proper domain, that is like age enough, and that can be tied for to like good affiliate programs or like even just an info site that can be monetized with AdStrive or something like that. Not always easy to find exactly that, and there's probably like, and you don't pay 30k for the domain or something like something crazy. Then there's not that many on at any given time on the marketplace. There is some, but like, you know, probably can count them on like two hands on GoDaddy, you know, of domains that match all of that right now. So, yeah,
for sure. Yeah, I think, you know, we mentioned earlier that, you know, we think they're kind of undervalued age domains. Like,
yeah,
I think I'm kind of quite willing to pay probably what would seem like over the odds for like a domain like that. I mentioned a few times on this podcast, like I paid for a domain. It was a failed Kickstarter project. Like lots of really good links from new sites and stuff like that. But it was only a DR12. So it only had a handful of links, but they were really good ones.
Yeah, it's fine. Like because it's easy to get from like DR12 to 40 later with just guest posting or Skyscraper.
Yeah. So I paid $4,000 for that domain, which is a lot for a 12, but
yeah,
you know, a year later with 300 articles on it, it's got 250,000 sessions a month.
That's really good.
With no link building. Awesome. As well. So,
oh wow, yeah. No link building on top. You're still DR12?
Yeah. 14 okay. Now, I think. Because it's got a few naturally. 14. So yeah, I haven't built any links yet on it either. So
yeah, that's what I was saying. You can afford to build a site and focus just on the content and the site building part of it if you learn how to pick up expired domains, which I believe a lot of people would be willing to learn how to pick up expired domains over learning link building. And so, yeah, I think it's going to be a growing side of the industry for sure.
Yeah, the way I see it, it's kind of a link building tactic. I think of it in some ways.
I do like the idea of pumping it up after I got it with like, you know, 20 guest posts or something, like just a little bit, especially like relevant stuff. I feel like it's kind of like you're restarting the engine, you know, of like the rankings. And if you build some links initially, it just helps quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, actually, I lied. I got like 4 Haro links or something. So I did get.
Okay, yeah. So that's the thing. Like, you kind of like signal that there is new stuff happening on the site by acquiring some links as well. Like, mm-hmm. more than for the links themselves, just to show Google, oh, this site is active again, mm-hmm. and other sites are taking notice. I think that's quite important. So I think that it's kind of like, you know, when you have a new domain, the first few links really usually push your number of keywords and things like that quite a lot. And I feel it's a bit the same on expired domains, and it's not because it's an expired domain that you should do absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. But a little bit is enough.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay, so few questions for you. Like, we won't go into too much detail, but sort of kind of quick questions. So what would you say was your kind of biggest win, I guess? So in anything that you've kind of done online.
Like,
not unexpected ever? Win. Biggest unexpected win. So something you really did well that you didn't expect to.
The site we sold for like mid 6-figure that we mentioned on the site on the blog. It was one of the most competitive affiliate niches out there. Like, it's like, yeah, it's top 5, I would say. Like, you know, one of them is mattresses, one of them is hosting, it's one of the other 3, basically. I just say that. you know, you take your guess. And it was quite cool the way I picked it was full keyword research, because like everyone's DR 80 plus on all the affiliate subs. So it's like, and we started on a DR 0 domain, not age domain, fresh domain. And 18 months later, we sold it. Like, it was making 16K a month, and we sold it for 16 to 18K. I can't remember exactly, something like this. We sold it for mid-6 figures. And the way I managed to find keywords and dodge all the big guys was by using the support section of the product we were selling, of multiple products we were selling, and checking all the questions that people were asking and all looking at the search traffic. And none of the competitors wrote for all of these.
Yeah.
And it was like one Indian site, something like this, right? And we just wrote all of these. And basically the answer was, for some of these, like, you know, there were a lot of competing products, as there is in competitive industries. And, you know, some products had some features and some products didn't have some features. So like, some people were asking, oh, I can't do this with the product. And usually the answer was like, well, you should just buy the other brand, right? Because the other brand can do this and this brand cannot. And we just literally write an article that is perfectly SEO optimized for that question, explain why that product can do it, and show how the other product can do it, and then explain to people that there is a refund policy and that they can refund the current product they have and switch it for the other one with our affiliate link and buy that. And that was 80% of the revenue of that site, actually, I would say. So we did quite well with that. There was absolutely nobody in front. It's not the case anymore. Everyone has looked at that site now, figured out these keywords, and all the DR 80 plus sites are in these queries. And that's why we sold it, because I told Mark, I was like, yep, we are here now, but in 6 months, I don't know. Like, if people see what we're doing, it's very likely that that people will start writing for these topics. And so we went in, we did it. The new buyer was like one of these huge sites. So he was able to grow the site because he has all the resources, access to all the link sources. Right. He was one of the biggest sites in the industry, basically, and he bought that site. So he did fine. Don't worry. We didn't just take his money and he made no money. He made a good profit on this.
Okay.
But for us, given the fact that we only had that foot in the industry, it would have been complicated to maintain our position. And so that was, we did that quick play and sell, and then it was quite well timed, to be honest. From our perspective. So I would say that was a pretty cool win from a strategic point of view in just 18 months. And I think we spent $54,000 building that site, all content and link costs included. So that was a pretty profitable one. And I only worked on that site on Friday afternoon. So that was pretty good, actually.
Yeah. Awesome. So that tactic you used go through the help pages. Is that mean? Is that mm-hmm. something that you would do again? Is like, is it? Does it need to be a specific?
It doesn't always work because, like, yeah. it really like you need a product that is quite technical with lots of questions and problems, so that it's box a lot of like keywords. You know, for like more straightforward products, it's a bit trickier. But I think a lot of affiliates are good at making like roundup reviews, like best exploit, etc. But they're not very good at identifying which keywords tied to a problem where you can sell something to people, right?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of opportunities. It's like it's going to convert less than the best keyword, but it's going to be 10 times less competitive. And quite often, if you the problem is it's like it takes writing for that. It takes actual skills in writing, in understanding how do you make content that is both informative and selling. And so it's a lot more complicated to outsource to terrible writers on Upwork or something like this. And so that's why most people don't go for it. But that opportunity is here in many, many niches, and it's often under-monetized. I think someone who figures that out, there's good money to be made there, and it's an easy way to dodge the big guys in many industries. And you can go for more competitive industries with much higher payouts because you know how to dodge them, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, so yeah, I think it's kind of similar with info content versus affiliate content, especially the best.
But the thing is, like, content now, everything can be affiliate content if you're smart enough, if you can write properly. It's like it's not like that separation. Like we brought it up so that people understand like the main goal of a page, but it's a more fluid notion than that. It's like everything is a bit informational and a bit commercial. It's just that. And then your skills as a writer allow you to bridge these two types and, you know, be monetized quite heavily even when you do infocom. Good example, I don't know if you've seen, but I'm writing newsletters now on Friday. There's a ton of affiliate links in my newsletters. but people love reading them, and it's still like informative, and there's like case studies and et cetera. But it's also quite profitable for me to write that. I think if people want an example, that is a good bait, actually. I didn't think about that, but now that's a good bait. Go sign up for our newsletter so you can see that. That is a good bait. I didn't think about that, I promise. But it's one of these public examples where I can show like how I do this, you know, and like you can just look at that piece of code and be like, okay, how does he make money with affiliate while also giving information? And I think that, yeah, like that is going to be what small affiliates are going to have to learn to be able to dodge some of the bigger publishers that are going for these big affiliate keywords now, you know?
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Okay. In response to that then, biggest fail? Maybe you expected to do well, but didn't.
The biggest fail, I'm sure, I mean, you know about our site Health Ambition, that used to be an old case study for Toy Hacker. So that's how I got. Yeah. I think that site was like wrong time, wrong place, you know? It was like in the health niche just before the Medicare update. It was doing quite well. Like, it was like mid five figures a month's revenue or something. Like, it was great. But the Medicare update being what it is, it slammed that site. But the fail is not that the site got slammed. Like, okay, that's a fact of like, if you do SEO for 12 years, like, you will have some sites that get slammed. The fail was that 3 months later, we had a debate with Mark on whether we should sell that website or not. That could have been very, very close to a seven-figure exit. Not sure it would have been seven, but very close, you know? And I convinced him not to sell it. So that is the fail.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, that's like predicting the future, right?
Like, you're asking me biggest fail. Here you go. Like,
yeah,
what would my bank account look like today if I just went the other way? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, well, here you go. We don't always win.
Yeah. So, do you listen to Mark more now when he says he wants to sell a site?
It depends. I mean, it depends. We've been a bit more aggressive on selling sites now, but we do also want to like get some of our sites to like grow quite big. So we're not. It takes time, you know, to get a big site now these days. It takes multiple years. So yeah, there's a bit of both in our portfolio, basically.
Yeah. Okay, we've got up to around the hour now, so be really good to wrap it up soon. And just before we do that, though, it'd be really good to hear about, you know, some of the plans you have for Authority Hacker in the coming months, next year maybe, and beyond.
Yeah, I mean, the plans for Toy Hacker is like I make them up as we go. So usually I'm not too sure. What I know is that our beginner's course is getting a bigger date in January. When we sell, you know, I would say our courses are pretty expensive compared to the market average, but we pride ourselves in offering lifetime updates, and we don't bullshit on that. We actually do it. Like I spend, like everyone that paid us will not pay a single dollar to get these updates. I'm spending days and days updating, for example. So that is the plan for now, like making sure all the people that paid us get what they paid for and get like all the updates, etc. I want to get more, like we've done more YouTube this year, but it was kind of like sluggish and slow. I want to increase that quite a bit. I'd like to get into live streaming as well. So I'm not sure we'll get into that, but that'd be fun. I've done a few trials in the past and it's done quite well. People liked it. I literally asked the chat to choose a niche, and the challenge was to find keywords I can rank for with a new site. And of course they picked both personal finance, which is like the hardest, one of the hardest, one of the fives, I would say.
Yeah.
And we did it. Like it took like an hour and a half, but we found like about 20 keywords that were like pretty easy to rank for a new site that could be monetized with affiliate offers as well. So I'd like to do more of that kind of stuff, of like real hands-on stuff. I think that's what I'm pretty good at like real life examples, opening your browser, showing people, etc. So yeah, I mean, more of the same, really. That's what it is in different formats. But we do spend a lot of time on our paid content as well. That's why sometimes we don't have as much free content as we'd like to. But yeah, it's you know, that's the business model we've chosen, and I'm happy to do that.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, look forward to all that. What's the best way for people to follow you then online?
Really is to sign up to our email list, I would say. The easiest way to sign up to our email list is go on our homepage, so atarihacker.com. There is a free training that people can sign up for. You will be pitched our beginner's course, so I'll tell people before they sign up so you know. But you also will be signed up to our weekly newsletter, which is very often like case studies, me Googling stuff, finding interesting stuff in SEO and things like that. And I think it has had really good feedback so far. And I'm quite enjoying doing it. So actually tomorrow is Friday at the time at which we're recording. And half of my day will be spent figuring out what the hell I'm writing for the newsletter. But it should be fun. Like, so if you want a bunch of our experiments, if you want us to share some of our results, etc., it's the best place to follow that, basically.
Cool. And of course, you've got a podcast and a YouTube channel as well.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. You guys just search Atari Hacker in your podcast thing or on YouTube and you'll find us.
You see, you're really on to plugging that newsletter now. You got that in your head.
So. I enjoy it a lot, actually. It's like, you know, because it's, sure, emails are profitable when you're on an email list, but it's not that. It's that it's the one type of content that is not submitted to algorithms. So I get to write whatever I want. And I get to like, you know, I don't have to write for a keyword, or I don't have to write for the click-through rate on YouTube or something like this. And it gives you so much more freedom on what you can talk about. And I can see the engagement is higher actually because of that. And so it's my favorite content format right now because it's not constraining. The only thing that I need to worry about is the subject language opens and everything else is like, I get to talk like on a podcast. Like I don't have to like think about the keyword, all of that, etc. I just want people engage with like genuine content, you know. So that's why it's actually my favorite content format right now.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thanks very much for taking the time today,
Gail.
Speak to you again soon.
See you later.
Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. If you're listening to the podcast version of this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please rate and review, as this will allow us to grow our audience and create more shows like this one. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to the channel and click on the bell to be the first to know about any new episodes that we release. Until the next episode, goodbye.